What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is episode 396 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. You can always listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, and you can follow along on our social pages on Facebook and Twitter, X, whatever you're calling it these days. So good to be back this week. Got a good week for you folks. We're back obviously today with a new episode. It'll be out later. We also got a good guest Friday as well. So we got a returning guest coming back to help preview the Masters golf tournament that's going on this weekend. So that will be good to get that out for you folks later this week. So we'll keep you updated as to, or well, that will come out on Friday. So I think got plenty of things today to talk about. Red Sox, obviously, with successful weekend that they just had against the Cardinals as they opened up their home account at Fenway this season. So we'll get into those games and how they did this weekend. We'll get into some Celtics, some Bruins as their seasons are coming to a close, and then just some other things as well. March Madness, too, we'll get into as the men's championship is tonight. Women's championship was yesterday, so we'll talk about both of those things later. Got a good top five as well, spring themed top five, although it doesn't really feel like spring today, but we will get to that later. So I think we will start with the Red Sox. Obviously, it's been great to see the offense come back this weekend, a three-game sweep over the Cardinals, a doubleheader sweep yesterday. The Red Sox won in a walk-off 5-4 in the opener in the 10th inning, and then won 18-7 last night against the Cardinals, in which the offense really returned in a big way. And this was, following up a 13-9 win in the home opener on Friday. So, offense is definitely back in a big way. But before we get further into, talking about the play on the field, there was something I did want to talk about that, Jarren Duran, recently opened up a lot about his mental health struggles. And I guess with the Red Sox documentary that comes out tomorrow on Netflix, in which the Netflix crew basically followed the Red Sox around the entire season last season, apparently there's an episode where he really talks in depth about his struggles with mental health. And I just figured it was a good place to kind of mention that, I think it's really, really important that, he felt comfortable enough to open up like that. And obviously, people watch the documentary. I definitely would recommend people watch it. And, I think it'll be really powerful when he shares some of the things that he shares. There's some specific things that he shares that I don't know if I feel comfortable talking about on this podcast, but I think it is really, really important that we still, prioritize the mental health of our athletes. I know it's easy, for us to kind of sit here and talk about athletes as, don't really know what the right term is, but sometimes we don't, we kind of forget that athletes are regular people. And so I think it just, Jaron, I think, talks about and opens up a lot about, hearing stuff from fans and kind of, having to deal with that sort of stuff and, the mental struggles that he goes through. And I think it just is really, powerful that he's comfortable to be able to open up to talk about things like that. So I just figured that that was an important thing to kind of talk about before we get into the on the field stuff. And I think it's going to be worthwhile for people to hear about some of the things that he's gone through or going through as well. So I just thought that was important to talk about. But I think talking about this baseball team, there's a lot of good positive vibes around this team, I would say. I think just based on what we've seen over the weekend with, the offense really coming back after, struggling in that first series against the Rangers, in which, they only scored 11 runs in four games. So, really kind of were struggling for offense, but, kind of came back in that series finale in Baltimore that the Red Sox won 8-4, won the final two games of those series, and then obviously follows it up with, sweep this weekend at, home opener. Obviously, tremendous baseball day, beautiful weather. Red Sox, got started early in that game with the home runs by Trevor Story and Willy Abreu in the first inning. They go back to back and kind of just sets the stage for a great offensive day in which the Red Sox scored 13 runs. Pitching wasn't great. Walker Buehler had his issues. Red Sox give up 9 runs as a team. You're probably going to lose a game in which you give up 9 runs pretty much every day, but 13 runs obviously is more than enough to beat it. So, I think just great to see this team bouncing back. And it's not just the entire team, it's Rafael Devers, who was 4-for-4 in the nightcap last night, and so great to see him back and hitting. And I think for me personally, I thought it was just a matter of time before he gets back into the swing of things. I think, really for him, just the, limited spring training action that he saw, I think for me had a lot to do with why he struggled so much out of the gate, but is now up to 263 on the season, and really doesn't look like he's missed a beat. I think the great thing for him is always, using the opposite field, using left center. And I think, like, you saw him hit a couple doubles off the wall last night, and it's just great sign to see that, where he's a guy that was starting off obviously so poorly, with all those strikeouts, but I think is now calm down a little bit, is a little bit more in rhythm. And I think just for him getting used to being that everyday DH, I know is an adjustment. For hitting, obviously, it's not really much different, but I think it's just you change your routine a little bit. So, just great to see that he's figured it out. And, Bregman's getting the home runs. Willy Abreu is like the hottest player on the planet. So just great to see those three guys really thriving. And I think just giving you excitement for what this lineup really can be game in and game out, for the rest of the season. Pretty much you have guys you just, up and down the lineup that are dangerous and can hurt you and, or can hurt the other team. And it just, makes it's just such a great lineup because you feel like you have guys 1 to 9 that can be able to, get big timely hits. So that seems like that's what's been going on. Obviously, when you score 18 runs, you're going to think that you're unstoppable. It's obviously not going to happen every game, but just great to see this team in rhythm offensively, hitting home runs, being kind of that offensive powerhouse that you kind of expect them to be. So, obviously, great to see the walk-off win yesterday afternoon. Abreu hits the single off the monster to drive in Bregman, and it just is, there's real, like, true excitement back with this baseball team, and I think that that's really just the best thing about the start of this season, that yes, they've won 5 in a row, yes, the offense is returning, but it's just like you can see that there's excitement, you can see that the guys are having fun, you can see that the fans are loving it. I think you could hear it if in some of those big hits that they had last night, when there's contact right off the bat and you can hear the crowd immediately react. And it's like, yeah, it may be early April, but the fans at Fenway are locked in, which is great, a great sign. And I really think, like, you've only seen, obviously, this team play 10 games so far this season, but I do think that there is a distinct possibility that you could be seeing a really special group that, goes really far. Now, obviously, they're not whole, which is kind of what makes you even more excited that they're out here throwing, different guys into the rotation. Hunter Dobbins gets called up from AAA, pitches yesterday and pitches pretty well in the nightcap. Sean Newcomb pitched yesterday, but it's like you don't have Bayo or Crawford or Giolito in your rotation, and the Red Sox seem to be, pretty well off. Obviously, Crochet was outstanding in his second start against the Orioles last Wednesday. Pitching a eight inning shutout. He will pitch tomorrow night against the Blue Jays, which will be exciting to see. I think just a guy that everybody's excited to see, take the rubber and take the hill. So, he's been great, I think, or was very good in his last start. I think that definitely there are some things to work on. I think that in a couple of these games that kind of felt like blowouts, the Red Sox kind of seemed to have trouble getting outs. Buehler obviously struggled a little bit, and then the bullpen, gave up a decent amount of runs in the ninth inning last night. But, obviously when the game's 18-3, it really doesn't matter what you're giving up in the ninth inning. But I think for this team, there's definitely still, some growing pains to go through as they kind of figure out the rotation, and so I think it will be interesting to see when the guys like Bayo and Giolito return. I think they're still going through some rehab outings in the minor league, so it'll be interesting to see what happens when they come back. Richard Fitz has thrown a couple of games, and he'll pitch tonight against the Blue Jays. And then Newcomb obviously pitched yesterday, and then you had Dobbins pitch as well. So be interesting to see if Dobbins gets another start. I think it may have had a lot to do with the fact they were playing a doubleheader yesterday, but just a really solid outing from him. Pitched five innings, gave up two runs. And I think for this Red Sox team, any kind of pitching depth that you can get, starting pitching wise especially, I think is great. And I think it's just interesting to think about, a team that came into, this season seemingly having a lot of starting pitching depth. The depth is being tested right now, but I think that it looks pretty solid. So Red Sox and Blue Jays will open a four-game set at Fenway this evening, 6:45 start times this season for, I think, weekday games that aren't Friday. So kind of interesting change there. So if you're getting out to the games, any games this week, make sure you get there a little earlier, I guess. And then they'll close out the series with Toronto Thursday at 4, and then they will travel to Chicago to take on the White Sox this weekend for a three-game set against the White Sox. So that's what's coming up for the Red Sox. Great way for them to, open their home schedule at Fenway with some great offense and, dramatic win on Sunday afternoon. So just, I think, awesome to see this team really kind of give you some excitement, with some of the guys that have been on fire to start the year. Abreu's been great. Christian Campbell's been really fun to watch. He's already homered a couple times. Trevor Story's homered a couple times. Bregman obviously has been great, hitting 341 to this point in the season. And you have a guy like Devers, who's seemingly back, 263 on the season with 10 hits and 38 at bats, so not too bad. But just excellent to see a number of those different guys starting really, really well. Carlos Narvaez, obviously the backup catcher, has gotten into the action, had a couple RBIs last night. He's hitting 429 on the season, so good start for him. Romy Gonzalez had a big hit in the ninth inning yesterday afternoon, so good to see him come off the bench. But this is a team that's really seemingly firing on all cylinders offensively at this point. And obviously, look, it's a long season, 162 games. They are going to go through stretches where they look unstoppable offensively. Then I'm sure they're going to go through stretches where they struggle to score runs. It's kind of just how things go. But I think great to see this team bounce back from kind of a tough opening series where they kind of struggle for offense. And now the runs are coming, and you really are able to see what this lineup is going to be able to do, I think, for the majority of the season. And, honestly, it's funny that I mentioned all the guys that are doing well to start the season. Somebody like Durant, hitting 239, not great, but if that guy starts, hitting the way that we expect him to, I mean, this is an offense that really, I think, is going to be one of the best in baseball, not just the American League, and I think really gives this team the ability to be carried by an elite offense that should be, I think, keeping them at or near the top of the AL East pretty much all season. So, great start for the Red Sox to have a four-game series against the Blue Jays at Fenway this week, and then go to Chicago play the White Sox for three over the weekend. So I think that's going to do it for the Red Sox. Going to move on, talk a little Celtics as they are winding down the season, entering the final week of the season. Four games left. Celtics are 58 and 20 and pretty much locked into that second seed. They're four games back of the Cavaliers for first place. So doesn't look like they're going to catch the Cavaliers, but a great way for this Celtics team to close out the season. Got a couple interesting games this week. The Knicks tomorrow night in New York, and then they will travel to Orlando to play the Magic on Wednesday. Magic, I think, in my opinion, a possible first round playoff opponent. So that will be interesting to see. But the Celtics were busy this past week, finishing up the road trip in Memphis with a 117-103 win. Al Horford was awesome in that game with 26 points. Derrick White, 10 assists. The Celtics really did a great job down the stretch in that fourth quarter to close out the win, to close out the perfect road trip. And I think the Celtics went 6-0 on a road trip for the first time ever. Then obviously hit some turbulence coming home that first game back, losing to the Heat 124-103. But the Celtics then bounced back with wins Friday against the Suns, and then last night against the Wizards. It didn't seem like the Celtics had to expend too much energy to beat Washington or Phoenix. Phoenix is a team that's just not very good defensively, and the Celtics pretty much took easy advantage of that. And then Pritchard and company played well offensively against the Wizards last night. So, for this team, I think, as we've talked about for weeks, it's kind of just the building up for the postseason, making sure everybody's healthy. Porzingis and Jason Tatum sat last night. Probably see some of the regulars sit a couple games this week. I do know that Jaylen Brown does need to play in three of the last four games to be eligible for postseason awards. So I wouldn't be surprised if he plays three out of four or maybe all games. But, I think it's kind of like they do want to be smart, because he's dealing with the bone bruise in his knee, which, is just something he's going to have to manage, I think. But, you hope that the Celtics and he, are smart about this down the stretch, that he doesn't force himself to play too much, to play last night, and then played against Phoenix in Miami, 31 points in the game against Phoenix. But I don't think that the starters really had to expend much energy last night. Obviously they started a couple guys off the bench, in Cornette and Sam Hauser, but I think, again, it's kind of just gearing up for that postseason and getting guys ready and in a good spot. And I think you're seeing guys like Cornette playing at really high level. So, Cornette started last night. He was the only guy that started, or the only bench guy that started, because you had Horford, Holiday, Derrick White, and Jaylen Brown that all started. Obviously, when you're playing a team like the Wizards, it's not necessarily the most difficult team to play. But I think thinking about a guy like Cornette, that you've really seen him come into his own this season, playing some really good basketball, had 9 offensive rebounds last night, 14 in all, and I think just gives you a lot of confidence that you can play him a decent amount of minutes in the postseason. Because I think, as we've said several times, I do expect that this postseason run is going to be a little bit more challenging. I think the Celtics are going to be probably playing some longer series against some better teams than maybe they played last season. So I think it's important that they get good, production from guys like Cornette that can give them extra possessions, and just is such a smart player, knows exactly where he's supposed to be at all times, and really just fits the Celtics system so well. So just been great to see his growth this season. The recent growth from Baylor Shireman has been awesome to watch. Really curious about, what his postseason prospects look like if the Celtics do decide to give him some minutes, off the bench, if they're, 10, 15 minutes in a game here or there, can he give you some minutes? Because I think a lot of times he's playing with great confidence and, maybe tried to do, has times where he's trying to do a little too much, but, just has a great court vision, great shooter, really good confidence. And, I think you could be confident giving him some minutes in the postseason, even though the Celtics are a team that typically likes to, keep the rotation pretty small. I think you think about the typical starting five and then, Pritchard and Hauser and Horford and Cornette off the bench. Is there a spot there that they could use somebody like Shireman? Could they use Torrey Craig, in games here or there when they need someone to kind of give them minutes at that wing spot? So I think, and obviously Pritchard's been great. He's been outstanding off the bench at 20 points and 7 assists last night. Just great to see his development. As we talk about Cornette, Peyton Pritchard has also had great development this season as well, being much more than a scorer. Obviously it's what he's known for off the bench, and it's probably why he's going to win Sixth Man of the Year. But I think his ability to be involved in the offense beyond just shooting, with the 7 assists, with 6 rebounds, is a great offensive rebounder, and just plays just really in control, which I think is great because this is, postseason basketball is sometimes a difficult place to kind of keep your head. And I think, Peyton's always a guy that plays with a really calm demeanor. And I think, again, with this team going as deep as they did last year and winning the championship, I think gives them kind of an edge of they kind of know what to expect with, postseason basketball. I do think it's going to be interesting with this team, possibly having to go on the road if they play at Cleveland, in the conference finals. But this is a Celtics team that's been great on the road this season. I think depending on how these final two road games go, in New York and in Orlando, it's possible the Celtics could set, I think, either an NBA record or tie an NBA record for their road record, and I'll take a look at that when we look at the standings later. But it just is good to know that this is a team that plays really, really well away from home. And so you don't have to worry about, oh, if they don't have home court advantage, in a series down the road, whether it's the conference finals if they play Cleveland or the NBA finals if they play a team like Oklahoma City, that you feel confident about where they're going no matter where they're playing. Yeah, granted, they've not been nearly as good at home this year, but I think really since that, stretch of play in December and January when they were losing a lot of home games, they've kind of gotten a lot better. I think just looking at this schedule, well, obviously, yes, they lost the game against the Heat at the Garden on Wednesday, but they hadn't lost at home since that game against Oklahoma City. Well, that was 2 games prior because they were on the road for 6 in a row. But, they've been a pretty solid home team ever since, kind of struggling and those points in December and January. So, I think the final four games probably just an opportunity for some more kind of bench players to see what they can do and see if they could possibly, earn some minutes in the postseason. But I think it's kind of just, resting, prioritizing that, and, kind of, I don't want to say testing out, but yeah, testing out certain rotations and things like that, and seeing what you can do if you do need to go to kind of a weird rotation or in the postseason, if there's an injury or something like that. And so I think it's important to test out different rotations and different groups of players to see, if you have to call upon certain guys in a pinch. So I am looking forward to seeing the game against the Magic, as that's a potential first round playoff opponent. Knicks, I think, are a pretty good chance that they're a second round opponent as well. So, I think it'll be worthwhile to watch both of those games this week, Tuesday and Wednesday. Celtics will be on the road against two playoff opponents, and then they'll finish up the regular season with home games against Charlotte both Friday and Sunday afternoon. So, I think it's kind of just getting ready for the postseason for the Celtics team, which I think will be a long postseason run, and will obviously, keep you updated in terms of, kind of a playoff preview that probably will come in the podcast at some point. So I think it's probably going to do it for the Celtics. We're going to move on. We're going to talk about the other team whose regular season is coming to an end. And sadly, it was official after the game Saturday that the Bruins had been eliminated from postseason contention for the first time in 9 years. So obviously, I think that was kind of a thing that we should have all expected, based on watching the team for the majority of the year. I feel like I kind of have been saying this pretty much since November, December, that it just didn't seem like they ever were a playoff team, and I think maybe there was some hope that they would have turned it around after firing the head coach, but kind of just seemed like it was a reactionary thing, and people can have their own opinions about Montgomery and St. Louis and that whole thing, but it just, disappointing for this team this year. I think it's been one of the more disappointing years in quite a while, and it just, there are a lot of things that I think need to go right for this team to kind of get back to where they need to be. I think that, sure, everybody's going to have their opinions in terms of, what the Bruins did at the trade deadline. I'm still, largely fine with it because, at a certain point, there's the bill that comes due for, going for it every year at the trade deadline and, kind of not having quality, the good enough assets that you can have to kind of go through a retool in the Bruins. So I think just simply needed more, draft picks and young talent. Yeah, obviously you can say whatever you want about their drafting and whether they don't know how to draft, whatever you want to say. But, it just seemed like there's a time for them to, prioritize the future. And they decided that was this trade deadline, which I think is the right decision, based on what you've seen from this team this year. It didn't really seem like it was something they should have, gone all in for, and should have gone the other way, which they did. And I think people should be glad that they did, because I think that, there's a better chance that they can turn this around quicker than if they just kept everybody back, kept bringing the same guys back, and not really having a plan for the future. So you at least hope that they have a plan for the future, and this offseason goes well. I know that there's a lot of trepidation, and rightfully so, given their track record with the drafting and the free agents and things like that. But personally, I think if the trade deadline is any indication, I feel like somewhat okay about their, plans going forward. So, I think as far as the play on the ice, just kind of is what it is at this point. They're a flawed team with, I think bad defense and bad special teams and, goaltending that's not really been up to par. You can say whatever you want about Swayman and his contract situation and whether he dragged the team along or whatever you want to say, but the defense hasn't helped him at all. And, obviously, if missed McAvoy, you've missed Lindholm for huge portions of the season. And so, when you're having to throw out Parker Weatherspoon every game, and look, I don't mean to disrespect him or anything like that, but going into the season, he's not a guy that you expect to be playing and starting every single game. They had to go and start, guys like Michael Callahan and Jordan Osterley, and it's no disrespect to those guys, but it's like I don't think that when you started the season that you expected any of those guys to be like regular lineup guys. I think thanks to the injuries and things like that. So, it's difficult to watch the team for sure, but then there are moments where you feel kind of good about the future in terms of what you see from a guy like David Pastrnak, who's continued to play at such a high level, even despite all the struggles of this team, all the struggles of the guys around him, and he's, quietly putting together one of the better seasons of his career. 3 points shy of 100 points, had a hat trick Saturday, and well, I was lucky enough to be there, and you can feel, the energy in that building, even despite the team having lost 10 in a row and, having no hope of the playoffs. But you have a guy like Pastrnak who is just, I think, easily top 10, top 5 player in the league. And I think if this Bruins team was anywhere close to the postseason, he like should clearly be the MVP. Like, I don't even think that there's a debate at how high level he's played this season and just how it's just everything around him is just kind of crumbling, but he's the guy that still goes out there, gives it his all, and plays, at an all-world level pretty much every night. So, Bruins fans should feel really good that they have a guy like that. And I know that it's, easy to be as upset about this season not really going the way that you would expect. But I think he's just been the one constant guy that brings it and really is, I think, showing you a lot of great leadership, and I really think that he's a guy that absolutely should be in conversation to be the next captain of the team. I know that, that people I think McAvoy should be the captain, and I don't think it's a bad choice or anything, but I think you've seen a guy that's shown you tremendous leadership through a season that's, been really one of the worst Bruins seasons in, a very long time, almost 20 years at this point, when you think about where they were with Dave Lewis as the coach. Even the teams that missed the playoffs in 2015 and 2016, were right there at the end of the season. So it's just like this is definitely different than that. This is, probably one of the worst seasons they've had in 20 years. But it's like it tells you that, you still have a guy that wants to work through it and be here, and I think that that should show you a lot. So I've been, impressed with David's game this season and, what he's had to deal, I don't want to say deal with in a negative way, but, all the struggles of the team, but he's maintained playing at such a high level, which is, great to see, and great to see him, exhibiting that chemistry with Morgan Geekie and Elias Lindholm lately, as they both have been playing on the same line. So, for me, that at least gives you some hope a little bit that, okay, maybe that's a trio that you look at the start of the season next season. I don't know who else is going to be here when they start training camp. What moves do they make in terms of free agent signings? What kind of draft pick do they get? Because I think, it's a very good chance the Bruins get a pretty high draft pick, possibly even, top five or top three picks. So, whoever that is, obviously, I think is a tremendous chance to, be an impact player for the Bruins next season. So, I think it's finishing up the season, playing for pride. And I have to say, like, being in that building Saturday night, you would have no idea that the Bruins had lost 10 games in a row prior to that. Garden is still full. The crowd is still electric, and the guys are still playing hard. I know that there are games where they struggle and they don't look good, kind of like last night against Buffalo, in which they blow a 2-0 lead and played well in the first period, and that was pretty much it. But I think it's just great to see that, like, the fans still appreciate them playing a good game Saturday night. And I think just goes to show you that, like, Boston is just such a great sports town that it's like the fans are still going to show up and support. The garden's still full on a Saturday night. Bruins lost 10 in a row, and it's like you never know. So I think just great to see this support is still there. But I think obviously this season has gotten away from the Bruins, but you hope that maybe it's somewhat of a quick fix in the off season and the Bruins can, get back to playing meaningful hockey around this time of year. I think it's going to be very strange to see only the Celtics playing, postseason games at the Garden. But I think the Bruins, yeah, will finish off the week or finish off the regular season. They will finish off the regular season next Tuesday against New Jersey at the Garden. They have games this week in New Jersey Tuesday night, and then they will host Chicago on Thursday night and then travel to Pittsburgh on Sunday afternoon. So I think, as we kind of talked about what's next for this team a little bit, I do kind of want to still hammer the point home that Morgan Geeky is a guy that you need to keep around. He keeps putting in goals. And he had 29, scored his 29th goal last night. He's going to hit 30 goals. He should be back. There should be no debate about whether he should come back. I think as far as the rest of the team, I think that you look at adding a couple of impact players in the forward group. I think defensively, the Bruins are going to be like largely the same from this season. It'd be interesting to see Andrew Peak, what happens with him, as he has one more year left on his deal. But the other guys are going to be back. Lindholm, McAvoy, Lowry needs a new contract. Zadorov. So it's like you look at those four guys there and Peak as five guys who are going to return. So I don't think that the defense really is going to change much. Maybe there's a change in the coaching staff, but I think largely that is going to remain the same. Swayman will be back. It'll be interesting to see if Korpisalo returns. I think that largely he's been fine this season, but I think with that contract, the Bruins try to, move off that. But I think forward wise, there could be a lot of spots that are up for grabs. And I think even guys that are currently on the roster now don't know if they're back. I'm kind of curious about what the Bruins feel about Husnadinov and Lauko, the two guys that they got back from Minnesota in the Brazeau trade. What are their plans for the two of them? Do they return as both of them are free agents? Geeky, obviously, as you mentioned, is a free agent and probably should return. I expect that Mittelstadt will return, as he's under contract, I think, for the next 2 to 3 years. So he'll be back. What do they do with Zacha? Curious about that. Could he be a trade piece? But definitely a lot of moving parts in the forward group that could be possible this offseason. So I think that's going to do it for the Bruins. There are four games left in the regular season. They're 31, 38, and 9. We'll play the Devils tomorrow night in New Jersey and then finish off the season in Chicago, Pittsburgh, and then New Jersey again. So I think that that's going to do it for the Bruins. Going to move on and talk a little Patriots as they made another move this past week, trading Joe Milton and a 7th round pick to the Cowboys for a 5th round selection. So I think a slight surprise for some people. I think I was surprised that I think two things that surprised me here. I was surprised that the Patriots did actually go through and trade him because I kind of thought that they would be in a position to develop him a little bit further so that they could, maybe get a better asset for him down the line, have him go through the offseason training camp and things like that, and then See if he gets into a preseason game or two, and then, deal him after that. But maybe it just wasn't going to be possible, as, it kind of was clear that he kind of wanted to be in a position where he could possibly, be in a position to play more as he goes to Dallas. He's going to be behind Dak Prescott, who's obviously had some injury issues. But, I think obviously he was probably not going to play here, unless something catastrophic happened to Drake May, whether an injury or something else. But I think, like, from his perspective, it makes sense to want to go somewhere where you have a better chance of, playing and starting. So I think I was surprised that the Patriots didn't hang on to him longer, because I feel like they could have gotten more for him. But I would say, like, a fifth round pick is not anything too bad, because honestly, for a guy that was drafted in the sixth round, played okay in the preseason, had that one regular season game, which was essentially a glorified preseason game, and played well, like, for that limited amount of tape, I was surprised that they got a fifth round pick, when people were talking about trading him at different points this offseason. I was like, you're probably lucky to get a sixth for him. So I think getting a fifth is pretty good. If you trade a seventh, you're moving up pretty significantly from the seventh to the fifth. And I know fifth round pick, we're sitting here talking about a fifth round pick, but NFL draft, you never know with guys that can hit at different points. So, I would say you take a fifth round pick, and the Patriots sure enough did. So I think it's a good swap for them. I think swapping a guy that probably, was not going to be in your long-term plans. And so I think, getting something for him made a lot of sense. So, I think as the Patriots move forward with Drake May and Josh Dobbs as the backup, kind of wouldn't be surprised if there's another, quarterback that gets drafted, just kind of as a developmental piece. I kind of felt like that's what they did with Joe Milton, and were able to get an asset for him, which I think is good. I think it could have been a little bit better asset management, but what are you gonna do? I think fifth round pick is fine, and I think for this team, you can kind of look ahead to what the draft is gonna look like, as that's coming up in a couple of weeks. Still obviously, it will be interesting to see what they do. Interesting to see how the draft or how the board falls. But I fully expect that Will Campbell is going to be that pick at number four. Patriots can put him in at left tackle and kind of be all set with that offensive line, which I think has a chance to be a lot better than it was last season. So that's kind of what I expect. I think if Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter is available at number four, decent chance that they could go for either one of them, but I kind of think that both of them will be taken by that point, and I just think Campbell's the easy pick to make. Maybe it's not the sexiest pick, but it's just, you need offensive line help. You've needed it for years, and it's like, I think you just gotta stop messing around and kind of just address that. And sure, arm length be damned, I don't really care. And I think this is a team that is better equipped to coach up younger guys. I just think that last year's coaching staff was a little bit out of their depth, and I think it's good that they have a, experienced group here that I think can get the most out of, Campbell, Hunter, whoever it is, and all the rookies, all the younger guys that come in, even the undrafted free agents, if there's guys that stick around. So, I think it'll be interesting to see with the draft a couple weeks away, but I don't think I anticipate any more Patriot news. Obviously the off-season program starts soon as well, and OTAs as well. So definitely pay attention to updates there. So I think that's gonna do it for the Patriots. Gonna talk some Revolution briefly. They dropped a 1-0 decision to FC Cincinnati over the weekend. as Cincinnati scored in the 65th minute. Revs unable to find the back of the net in this game. They still are without a goal. An open play, as both goals they scored last week were set piece goals. Obviously the free kick and the penalty kick from Carlos Hedel. But the Revolution, not really much offense in this game. One shot on goal, at 15 shot attempts compared to 19 for FC Cincinnati. Lose the possession battle 54 to 46%. And it just, I think, unfortunately, is a team that's still struggling for the offense. Campana, obviously, I think, is dearly missed by this offensive team. As the Revs had 10 corner kicks in this game, were unable to take advantage, obviously. And it just seems like it's more of the same, few and far between for the offensive chances. I really think that Ivicic kept them in this game. Cincinnati only scored once in this game, had a lot more chances. I thought Ivicic looked really, really good. And I think that, he's looked really good for this Revs team for a majority of his stay here. But the Revs, unfortunately, just continue to struggle to find offense. And, it's kind of just Carlos Hedel, and that's it. It's too bad that, Campana had that injury a couple weeks ago and has missed the last couple of games. And they're, asking Urruti to play a lot more than he probably was expecting. And I just think, like, at this stage of his career, he's not the goal scorer that he used to be. And the Revs are kind of just putting him in that position because they really don't have anybody else. So it just, the kind of frustration continues to build in terms of this team not really having a lot of offensive firepower. And so they have to, rely on the defense and the goaltending, which honestly, like, hasn't been bad this season. They've kept them in a lot of games. Ivicic, as I said, like, has had some really good games. And it's just, when you can't score goals and you are scoring 0 goals for a majority of the games, it's just, it's a not a sustainable way to play for this team that I think hopes to be something in the Eastern Conference. But it's just like, when you're consistently scoring 1 or 0 or 1 goal in games, like, you're really not able to feel like you're making much progress. So this is a team that's not quite in the basement of the East, but they're there, and it's like, are being, passed over in the standings in terms of, they're putting themselves in a hole that, if they start to figure things out, it's going to be hard to kind of make up some of the ground that they need to make up. So the Revs will play Atlanta United this weekend, in Atlanta, 2:45 start Saturday afternoon, and then they will go or return home against NYCFC the next Saturday. So two games coming up for the Revs. Hopefully they can kind of get some offense, but it's been hard to come by for this team this season. So I think it's going to do it for the Boston teams. We're going to give you a bit of a March Madness update. Give you the women's update first, as UConn won its 12th national title yesterday, beating South Carolina 82 to 59. A pretty tremendous win for the UConn women. Played a really good offensive game yesterday and played some good defense. So good win for them as they had a 23-point win yesterday. So in the men's, the tournament championship is tonight. Florida against Houston. Houston with a crazy comeback against Duke in the final moments of their semifinal win, 70 to 67. And then Florida beat Auburn 79 to 73 in the first semifinals of the championship. Be tonight, 8:50 start in San Antonio. Both Florida and Houston, number one seeds. Florida, I believe, going for their first title since Al Horford was there when they won back-to-back titles. Houston, actually not sure when their last title was. Maybe it's the 80s. but it's been a while, so should be an interesting game. Florida, kind of a high-scoring SEC team, but Houston has played really well in this tournament, I think, forcing teams to kind of play their style of, low scoring and, tough defense and kind of making it slower. So it'll be interesting to see what happens tonight. I think Houston's going to get the job done. I think with their big win over Duke, they're going to ride that momentum and, bring home another national title, the first one in a while. So I think, what else we're going to talk? Some NBA. We'll take a look at the standings. So we have a week left in the regular season. Couple games on the schedule tonight. Sacramento and Detroit at 7 o'clock on NBA TV, and then Philadelphia and Miami at 7:30. So we'll take a look at some notes here. Carmelo Anthony and Dwight Howard were among the, or Sue Bird as well, and Maya Moore were inducted into the 2025 Naismith Hall of Fame class. So that was announced over the weekend. Jalen Brunson finally returned from his ankle injury for the Knicks as they played last night. And we'll take a look. Yeah, I'll take a look at the standings here with about a week to go. So Cavaliers in first, 4 games ahead of the Celtics with 4 games to play. So all likelihood the Cavaliers will lock up that number one seed this week. The Knicks are in third place. They'll be pretty much locked into there. And so Pacers will be locked into four as well. And then the Bucks and the Pistons. So actually all the playoff spots and play-in spots have been clinched with Cavaliers, Celtics, Knicks, Pacers, Bucks, and Pistons in the top six. And then in the play-in spots, the Magic, the Hawks, the Bulls, and the Heat, 7 to 10, respectively. So the Celtics will play the winner of the 7-8 game, which at the moment would be the Magic or the Hawks. And then the number one seed plays the loser of the 7-8 game and the winner of the 9-10 game. And those two teams play, and then the winner plays the top seed. So we'll take a look at the Western Conference here. Oklahoma City still in first, obviously. They clinched the conference weeks ago at this point. The Rockets, number two. Pretty sure they're locked into that number two seed. And then you have the Lakers, the Nuggets, Clippers, and the Warriors in the top six. And then in the play-in spots, you have Minnesota, Memphis, Sacramento, and Dallas. Phoenix a couple games back of that final play-in spot. It is interesting, the Western Conference teams 3 to 8 are within 2 games of each other, so you could see some changes there. The Kings are in ninth, Mavericks in 10th, half game between those two teams, so that could possibly change. Although actually that doesn't matter, it just means that whatever team finishes ninth would have a home court advantage against the 10 seed. So I think, yeah, I think we'll move on to the NHL. As Alex Ovechkin set the all-time goals record, breaking Wayne Gretzky's record of 894 goals, as Ovechkin scored 895 yesterday against the Islanders. Pretty cool ceremony, setting the all-time record. So St. Louis Blues have won 12 in a row. So they keep playing well as they're looking to clinch a playoff spot. And we'll take a look at the standings in a sec, but here are some games tonight. Tampa Bay and New York, the Islanders at 7 o'clock, St. Louis and Winnipeg at 7:30 on NHL Network, Edmonton and Anaheim, Seattle and Los Angeles, Calgary and San Jose at 10:30. I'll take a look here at the standings in the Eastern Conference in the Atlantic. Toronto is on top of the division with 98 points, Tampa Bay with 94, Florida with 92. All three teams have clinched playoff spots at this moment. In the Metro, Washington with 107 points, Carolina with 96. Both of those teams have clinched playoff spots. And then the Devils in third with 89 points. And then in the Eastern Conference wild card, pretty much looks like it's pretty much locked up with Ottawa, that first wild card spot, and then Montreal the second. Ottawa with 90 points, Montreal with 85, 6 points clear of the Rangers and the Red Wings for that final playoff spot. So it looks like the Atlantic will have five teams in the postseason again. In the Western Conference, Winnipeg leads the Central with 108 points, followed by Dallas with 105, and Colorado with 98. All three of those teams have clinched playoff spots. In the Pacific, Vegas with 102 points, Kings with 97 points. They've both clinched. Oilers with 93 points in that final Pacific spot. And then in the wild card, St. Louis with 93 points, Minnesota with 91. Calgary, the nearest team, 6 points back of that final playoff spot. So playoff spots look like they're coming clearer and clearer into focus for both the East and the Western Conference, with most teams having about 5 or 6 games to go in the regular season. So we're going to take a quick look at some NFL notes. Former Patriots cornerback Jack Jones was recently just released by the Raiders yesterday. Teron Armstead of the Dolphins announced his retirement over the weekend, as did Julio Jones, 7-time Pro Bowl receiver, primarily with the Falcons. And Trey Lance signed by the Chargers to a 1-year deal. So we'll take a look at the standings here for baseball, although actually worth noting that the Blue Jays just came to terms with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on a new contract, 14 years for $500 million. So that was definitely a surprise waking up to that this morning, as, you know, they had not come to terms during spring training, but obviously have come to terms on a deal. So unfortunately, he will not be playing for the Red Sox anytime soon. So there were a lot of people that were hoping the Red Sox would try to sign him next offseason. So I'll take a look just quickly at the standings, obviously, as most teams have played about 10 games. Hard to really get an idea, but Red Sox a half game out of first at 6-4, Yankees 6-3. Other teams that are off to good starts, Texas is 8-2 in the American League, and then in the National League, the Phillies are 7-2. The Braves are off to a bad start, 1-8. Eric Bellier's Mets at 6-3, a game back in the National League East. And the National League West is off to a hot start, with the Padres at 8-2, the Dodgers at 9-2, and the Giants at 8-1. So interesting division there. So I think that's probably going to do it for checking in on the sports. We're now going to do the top five, and obviously it's, I wish the timing was better, but, you know, it's not the best weather day today, but we're going to do top five spring things that I'm looking forward to. So some sports stuff in here, some stuff from like around the Boston area. So these are not going to be in order. You know, I kind of probably should have numbered them, but we'll start with the sports things. So number one, you know, obviously is, you know, don't say looking forward to because this happened, but the Red Sox home opener is always just a great start to the spring. You know, it's kind of like an unofficial start to spring, as, you know, baseball weather's here, and it was a great baseball day on Friday, you know, as the weather was in the 60s. So, you know, that's definitely up there in terms of, you know, I think that thing is, it's passed at this point, but I would say that definitely was a spring thing that I was looking forward to. So I think, you know, that's in there. Maybe let's just say that's let's do that at number one. We'll go 1 to 5, and then number two, the start of the playoffs for NBA and NHL. Obviously this season, it'll be for the NBA that I'm looking forward to. But I think just playoffs in Boston in general is just a different kind of feel. I think especially if the Celtics and or the Bruins are in it, just gives you that great feeling of hope. So I put that at number two. Start of the NBA playoffs. Number three, kind of a sports thing a little bit. It's the marathon. Always look forward to that. I'll have a couple friends running this year, which will be really, really exciting. So, that's definitely just a quintessential Boston event. If you're from the area, everybody loves going to watch the runners and all that. So I think that's definitely looking forward to that. That will be great as the marathon is 2 weeks away. So actually probably will not be recording a podcast on that day, but a tremendous day in Boston, obviously. Number four, kind of just a general thing that I like to do out in the community. There's a great network of rail trails in the greater Boston area that I've gone on a number of them throughout the year. So that's definitely a great spring thing that I like to do to get out and kind of just enjoy the weather. So that's a good one. Number four for you. Definitely there's some great trails all over the place. If you're in the greater Boston area. And then number five, kind of a spring, kind of a summer thing, but there's a great ice cream place that me and my family go to in Maynard called Erickson's. Been going there every year since I can remember. They're open, I think, for their 86th, 87th year. So we always like going over there in the spring and summer. Definitely check it out if you are in the area at some point in the spring and summer. Just the best ice cream on the planet. So I think that's a good number five. Don't really have, any other honorable mentions. I think those five are pretty good, but definitely some of those activities you should seriously consider checking out in the next few weeks as it starts to get warmer. So hopefully the weather starts improving. You can start doing some of those things. So great to be back with you folks. Obviously, this week we've got a good guest Friday coming for you guys later this week. So we will talk to you then.